We're doing Sefer Amidot. We're up to page Lamed Zayin. And the Magen Midvanei had explained that when Hashem gave us the Torah, He says, you're fit for my Torah. How are we fit? Because we're supposed to have Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz Kedema LaTorah. And so our good traits are the preempt for making us worthy of accepting the Torah. You must have good traits. Derech Eretz Kedema LaTorah. And so if Hashem says, you are fit for receiving the Torah, what Hashem is saying is you have those traits that make you fit for the Torah. We're on page Lamed Zayin. We already know from the commentaries of blessed memory, Hashem wanted to purify, to give merits to the Jewish people. That's why Hashem gave them so many Torah and mitzvot. As the verse says, Hashem chafetz eman tzidko yagdil Torah v'yadir. Sha'ratzon baze, what our sages meant by this is, ki ha-kadosh baruch hu katav torto dvarim rabim. Hashem wrote in the Torah many things, asher ilu lo nichtevu, that even if they wouldn't have been written, ruin and likatev, we would have figured out that they should have been written. There are things in the Torah that you didn't need the Torah to tell you. Vayinu mekayimim otam atzmeinu, we would have performed those mitzvos of our own accord. There are mitzvos that you would have done on your own. Kmo meniat achilat dvarim ha-meusim, like refraining from eating disgusting things. Hasheketz v'achbar v'chadme me'inanim. You don't see that many people eating spiders. You don't see that many people eating mice. Things like that. The Torah prohibits you from eating a spider. Gee, I wouldn't have eaten spiders even if the Torah would have said it permitted. The Torah says you're not allowed to eat mice. I don't see people eating mice. So there are things in the Torah that we would have sort of adhered to even without the Torah saying so. But Hashem included them in the commandment, so then we also get wages over keeping those mitzvot. Because when a person is commanded to do something, then when he does it, it's considered a greater accomplishment than if he would not have been commanded to do it. Why? Why is it that if someone asks you to do something and you do it, it's more worthwhile than if you would have volunteered to do it? That seems counterintuitive at first glance, right? But it's a concept the Talmud tells us. Gadol ha-mitzuve ve'oseh, one who is commanded and performs is greater than someone who is not commanded to perform. You guys know the background to that Gemara? The Gemara brings, there was a rabbi who was visually handicapped. He couldn't see. And initially he said, if you'll tell me that those who are blind are free from performing mitzvos, if you can prove to me that that's the halacha, I will make a party in honor of all the rabbis, because then I'm such a great person, I'm doing all the mitzvos, even though I'm not commanded to do so. Then they taught him that if you are commanded to do so, it's considered a greater accomplishment than if you volunteer to do it of your own. So then he says, forget it. If you can prove to me that the halacha is that I'm forced, that I'm commanded to do so, I'll make a party in honor of all the rabbis. So that's what the Gemara is talking about there. Why? Why is it greater if you're commanded to do so than if not? Ki en shalitut ha-yetzer hara bilti al adorim ha-ktuvim ba-Torah. We don't have any yetzer hara unless we're commanded to do something. Ma she'em besug ha-tzivuim va-azarot. When the Torah commands you or warns you from doing it, then you have a yetzer hara. Aval davar she'eino mitzvah va-azara, but when the Torah doesn't command you to do something, and koch ba-yetzer hara lefatot ta-adam, then the yetzer hara doesn't have any force to seduce us. And if you think about it, I say this sometimes both to parents and to educators. Sometimes we create the yetzer hara. Sometimes we create the temptation for our children. Sometimes if you wouldn't have said anything, the child wouldn't have thought to touch it. Imagine you bring home a book and you put it on a high shelf and the kid's not going to touch it. But you know you borrowed it from the neighbor, and it's a leather-bound book, and so you tell the kid, don't you dare touch that book on that high shelf. Oh, okay, now all day the kid's going to look at that book, and he's tempted. You created the temptation. Right. Otherwise, he would have looked at the shelf, seen 500 books. Okay, why would he go and touch them?
Don't you dare study those books all around here.
Oh, so but we're all that way. If I were to say right now, no one leave this class for the next 10 minutes, right away you feel compelled to leave. You feel like your freedom's being impinged upon. That's what King Solomon did when his father told him, don't let Shimi ben Gera, your Rebbe, die a peaceful death, because you know he cursed me out. He told me I'm an adulterer. He told me so many wonderful things. Here King David uses the term Vehu kilalani kilalani mretzet. He cursed me. Now the word nimretzet we don't find in Tanakh, so our sages say it's an acronym that he called him Noef, Moavi, Rodef. I don't remember what the Tzadi and the Taf stand for. Maybe Toiva. I don't remember. David tells him, don't let him die a peaceful death. I promised him I won't hurt him, but you find a smart way to get back at him. So what does King Solomon do? He calls in Shimi ben Gera and he says, look, you got away with it with my father, but I'm telling you, so long as you stay in Jerusalem, a hair won't fall off your head. But you're not allowed to leave Jerusalem. You must stay in Jerusalem for the rest of your life. You may not leave. So for 2 years, he managed fine. And then a servant ran away from him outside Jerusalem. So he personally saddled his donkey and rode out to get that servant. Why? Shlomo, in his wisdom, knew that even though he's giving him the best city in the world, and in King Solomon's time, it was really the best city in the world, even from a materialistic perspective. Kings were coming to visit. You had anything you could imagine in Jerusalem. Not only from a spiritual perspective, which is what interested Shimi ben Gera, because he was a top sage, but also from a materialistic perspective. So why did Shimi have to personally go out and catch that slave? Because that's what Shlomo did. He created a Yetzer Hara. When you tell a person, you must stay here, so then they feel a tremendous need to leave. I was once in a yeshiva where they forbade traveling, and I always needed to leave. Then I came to America's Arav, where no one tells you what, nothing. You can do whatever you want. No one says a word. And I would stay a month in the yeshiva without seeing the outside of the yeshiva. I'd go from bed to the Beis Medrash to the lunchroom to the Beis Medrash to bed. That was it. I didn't see any outside walls. I didn't feel a need to. Says the Magen Midivna. When we're commanded, then we suddenly feel this need to break the boundaries. That's one of the differences between pre-giur and post-giur. Before a person does giur, it's much easier to keep Torah and mitzvos. After a person finishes the giur process, suddenly they're answering to Hashem, suddenly it's much harder. Now you're obligated, and now you suddenly feel like, hey, where's my freedom? And it's much harder, much harder. Yes, Daniel.
That's a very, I don't see what put with that perspective. Like the Nisadis, Midrash is feeling that if we were not commanded by God, we didn't have the urge to do bad things, you know, what's good by that? A bit of like the other version I learned that Abraham knew the things he did. He was not commanded to most of the things he did, but he did it because they knew Tovah, they knew it was good, it came from God. But he asked God to command him to do circumcision. He waited to do it. God commanded him because he knew if it came from God, it came from something that was bigger than him. Till then, he had been serving God inside his intellect, not something that was greater than him. And this approach is very, I don't know.
But there's a reality. There's a reality. If we want to delve deeper, it stems from man's free will. We have free will, and we want to have free will. And it's one of the reasons why we don't like owing anyone anything, and we don't like to owe a debt of gratitude. It's one of the reasons that people are ingrates. It's one of the reasons that people turn on their parents. Why does a teenager rebel? Why do people turn on the hand that feeds them? Because if I had to live up to the obligations that really stem from the kindness that I've received, I really owe them a lot. Look what my parents did for me. So let me turn on them. They're not worth it. They're wrong. And what they did wrong is by so far outweighs what they did right. I for sure don't owe them anything. You know, we have that innate tendency. We try to find evil in those that we owe something to. And this can be anyone. Look how people talk about institutions they've learned in. The beds were horrible there, and the air conditioning and the heating and whatever, the food. Come on, how much did you get out of the place? How much do you owe the place? How much did the place actually give you? We have this tendency. It's part of our desire for freedom. It's an incorrect approach. But
did they have this in us before we were commanded to the Torah?
Before also. If it's much easier for a child to take out the garbage before his mother asks him to. The second a parent asks, can you please take out the garbage, you start thinking of reasons why it doesn't work for you right now. You'll do it on your terms. It's part of that desire for freedom.
Doesn't a parent usually pay the kid to deal with garbage, things like that?
I hope not. I don't recommend it. Back to the Magen Midivna. So, the Magen Midivna continues, "Ze shamu b'mitrash kol yom atarev lo lai. Avid avod deri v'lo lai." He goes back to the Medrash he began with. All day long, you can do things, you're not tired. You could work and you're not tired. Tzalei, you come to Davin, v'lai, and suddenly then you're wiped out, you're worn out. You walk into Shmona Esrei, you're tired. Let me catch that quick minion. You walk into learning, you're tired. You ever notice that? By the end of class, everyone's tired. Class is over, you step outside, now you're awake for 3 hours, no problem. What happened? Asher mizeni ra mofet shen al adam kvedut b'chol maaseh ha'reshut. Here you see that whenever you do things that you feel are a freebie, I can do it, I cannot do it, it's my own free choice, so then you don't feel tired, you're not worn down. Rak b'dvar mitzvah, it's only when it comes to a mitzvah, suddenly I'm commanded to do it. As yavo yetzer v'nidme lo ki oyef yageh, that's when the yetzer comes, and you imagine that you're tired, you're worn out, v'gupo yichmad alav kimtil barzel, and suddenly the body is so weighed down, it's as though the body's made of lead. Why? Now we see why. Now ask yourself, you went to buy a computer. How much time did you invest? You went to buy a new phone. How much time? How much research? You went to buy a loaf of esrog. How much time did you invest? You went to buy matzah. How much time did you invest? When we go to do mitzvot, it's very tiring to look into, is this esrog good? Is that esrog good? Why? What's the big deal? Okay. That's this idea. And if we pay attention, we'll see it all the time. And a lot of it, often in life, by quantifying, by understanding the challenge, we can overcome it. If we recognize that this is what's going on, then we can overcome it. If a person opens his eyes in the morning and says, I'm so tired, come on, I can't get out of bed now, I'll daven later. God hears me when I daven in my bedroom. And putting on tefillin is a mitzvah, whether I do it in shul or not. So there are all kinds of good reasons why we don't want to get out of bed. But if we can realize this is what's going on here, come on, let's get out of bed. Let's go do it. We can do it. We can get out of bed. Sometimes we can play games with ourselves.
It's not as big a mitzvah as if you do it in shul. Even if there's no minion, it's a bigger mitzvah.
It's a bigger mitzvah to do it in shul, and a person should get used to going to minion, and all that is true. I'm just saying, when we wake up in the morning, suddenly we feel so tired. But then, we had a clock stop in our house. So I got up one morning, the clock stopped at 6:15. I got up one morning, it was 2:30 in the morning. And I'm looking at that clock, and it says 6:15. And I'm thinking, great, a new day. I go outside, and I'm thinking, it's awful dark for 6:15 in the morning. Gee. And I'm running late to shul, and I'm getting dressed, and I'm running around. And I'm halfway out the door. I look at my watch, and I see it's 2:30 in the morning. And suddenly I felt so tired. I only slept 2 hours, right? But until I realized it was 2:30, I had all the energy in the world. When I look at my watch, and I see it's 2:30, then I say, oh, boy, I was tired, wasn't I? No, I wasn't. When I thought it was 6:15, I had all the energy. I said, okay, it's a new day. So we are that way. The flip side is, if your clock stops at 2:15 in the morning and you get up and it's 6:30 or 7:30 or 8:30 and you look at it and it says 2:15, you tell yourself, boy, am I tired. I can't get out of bed at 2:15 in the morning. This is not normal. Okay, a lot of it is our thought. We are that way. But once we're aware of that, then that's the first step in overcoming it. So what we learned today, the Magen Midvina told us, Hashem gave us mitzvot that we would have figured out on our own. We're commanded not to eat spiders or mice. Well, we don't go around eating spiders and mice, and people wouldn't have eaten them even if they weren't commanded. Says the Magen Midvina, right, but the Torah gave you a commandment because when you're commanded, then the accomplishment is greater. Because the second someone tells you to do something, you feel like disobeying. And so that makes it greater when you actually adhere to the way of the Torah. And that's the thought we've been developing, this idea that when we come to do mitzvot, we get very tired. And the idea behind it is man's desire for freedom. And if the Torah is telling me to do something, then I don't want. Why don't you want? And I'll tell you a funny story. It's a true story. I had it with numerous kids in my house. I don't know if there's a kid that skipped this stage. And after you finish laughing, you'll think back and you'll realize we're all this way. So I make my kids lunch. And we'll take the last one to do this to me was the girl who's now six. But a year or two ago, I make her lunch and we're ready to leave the house. And she says, Abba, what'd you make me in my sandwich? And I say, peanut butter and jelly. And she says, no, I don't want that. I want hummus today. So, okay, I dutifully go. I take out two more pieces of bread, put hummus. I say, okay, I'll eat the peanut butter and jelly. I make hummus. She takes it. She's happy. Next day, I learned my lesson. I make her a hummus sandwich. We're about to leave the house. She says, Abba, what'd you make in the sandwich? And I say, hummus. And she says, I don't want that. I want peanut butter and jelly. Okay, I'm a good father. I go, take out peanut butter, make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Fine. The next day, I say, wait a second. Yesterday she wanted this. The day before she wanted that. And she always wants something different from what I want. So I make her a sandwich. And she asks me, Abba, what'd you make in the sandwich? And I say, hummus. And she says, but I want peanut butter and jelly. And I say, fine, I made peanut butter and jelly. And she says, which one is it? And I said, which one do you want? And she looks at me and she's puzzled. She doesn't know how to say, whichever one you said, I want the other one, right? So she looks at me and she's not sure what to say. And I'm holding the sandwich in my hand. And she says, what's in it? And I said, which one do you want? And she's standing there bewildered, not sure what to say. Now, if this would have only happened with her, fine. But it happened with almost every one of the kids. They reach the stage where they're into saying, no, I don't want what you made. Whatever you made, that's what I don't want. Sounds funny. We're all that way. There are aspects where we read it in the Torah, someone told you, I don't want to do it. And the only reason I don't want is because you said so. Unfortunately, this tendency also creeps into a marriage. And it can also be a conversational style. There are people whose conversation is always challenging. It doesn't matter what you say, they will try to find the reason why, but sometimes it's not that way. And maybe it's not that way altogether. They will always try to find an angle of why you're wrong. I once asked someone, I said, did you think about what I said, or did you first think about how to prove me wrong? Do you disagree with me? It's one of the big challenges. People will sometimes challenge you, and sometimes before answering, it's worth asking, do you disagree? You'll be surprised how even within businesses, sometimes this tendency can miss a whole meeting. You're trying to present an idea and someone just wants to be contrary. And all of us have this within ourselves. You know, I read a book, How to Deal with Difficult People. And in the introduction to the book, he says a very shocking statement. He says, you should realize you're a difficult person, so you want to close the book. He says, every one of us is someone else's difficult person. We are all someone's difficult person. There's someone who finds us annoying or difficult. We know who we find annoying, but did you ever stop to think there are people who you are annoying to? We are. Okay, so every trait that we look at other people and we notice, we should realize sometimes we have that trait to some degree.
Did you ever look in the mirror? Look in the mirror. Whatever you say about him, look in the mirror. That's probably you.
Huh?
There's a statement in the Talmud about that. That what you see in your aver is what you really have in yourself. That's very true in the Israeli Palestinian stuff with the Palestinians. They said Israel's committing genocide. Oh,